You're listening to The Conversation. It's about women and by women, but it's for everyone. From the BBC World Service. Hello and a warm welcome to The Conversation, a programme with an all-female take on the world. I'm Kim Chakanetsa. I'm always impressed when I look at images of people surfing. There's something about seeing a tiny figure riding an enormous wave that I really admire. But it's a sport I consider to be for the brave. The prospect of sharp rocks and sharks keeps me on the sandy end of the beach. But today I'm in conversation with two women whose worlds are very much within those waves. They're joining me from California and Mumbai. They are Corey Schumacher, who is a three-time world champion surfer from California, and she now campaigns to make surf culture more inclusive. And Ishita Malviya, India's first female professional surfer, who now runs a surf school in Karnataka in southern India. Well, hello to you both.
Aloha. Hi, Corey. It's so great to be speaking with you. I'm so excited to just get to know your story.
Similarly, Ishita, I'm so very, very happy to be speaking with you today across the distance with a shared passion for surfing.
I'm completely fascinated with surfing. When I see people out there in the water, I just think it's remarkable. But what does it feel like for you, Corey, I'll start with you, to be out there in the water, catching a wave, riding that wave? What's that feeling?
Oh, my goodness. Now, the way that surfing feels for me is very much a loss of self-awareness and coming into complete connection with my body. The sensation is one that really transcends peace. And it's something that has gone from an experience in the moment to something that I carry around with me constantly now.
I think Corey described it so beautifully. And for me, initially, I mean, it was just like such an exhilarating feeling, you know, and straight away, like the first time I ever caught my wave, you know, I just felt like a kid again, you know. So it was kind of rediscovering my youth and, you know, my playful nature and finding a big, big playground, you know. For me, surfing is so much more than just riding a wave. It's my form of self-expression. You know, it's definitely propelled me towards a more spiritual path in my life, I think, which I was intuitively seeking even before I knew it.
Well, let's talk about how you got started, Ishita. How did you discover surfing?
So I went to Manipal, which is in South India. It's a small university town. I went there to pursue my higher studies. I was actually studying journalism. And it was in my first year of college that my boyfriend Tushar and I, we ran into a German exchange student. You know, he just said that, "I've come down to India with a surfboard." And we were just like, "Wait a minute, what? Like, what do you mean you've come down to India with a board? Like, there's no waves here. You can't surf here." And he was the one who actually told us that he was learning to surf in India with a group of surfing swamis. Now, surfing and surfing swamis all in one sentence was just too incredible. So he told us about this small ashram where there were a group of devotees from California, and they were surfers, and they were teaching him how to surf.
And to explain, an ashram, that's a place of worship, a Hindu place of worship, is that?
An ashram can be many things. Like, it's usually a place for communal living. So this was specifically like a Krishna ashram. So yes, they do study the Bhagavad Gita and, yeah, practice their daily devotions. Two of the devotees from the ashram were actually from California, and they were surfers. And we were the first Indians, like, outside of the ashram to approach them. And we asked them if they would be willing to teach us. And they were super stoked, you know, that two Indian kids wanted to learn how to surf. So ever since then, like, life's completely changed, you know, for the better.
Stoked is a term we use for kind of like when you get the bug, and it's the feeling surfers get of just loving it.
Well, let's talk about how you got started, Ishita. Could you just explain to me on a practical level, like, how did you get started? Where did you get your first surfboard from?
Okay, so I'd have to kind of explain how the Shaka Surf Club started. So in the beginning, when we approached the guys at the surf ashram, they were a little too expensive for us. And so we asked them if they would be willing to give us surf lessons for, like, you know, at a student rate. So they were like, okay, sure. Why don't you bring a group of your friends from Manipal and we could give you like a discounted rate. So that's actually when we first started the Shaka Surf Club, when we were first learning how to surf. But Manipal being a university town, all throughout the week, our friends would be like, yeah, we're coming surfing. And like the morning we had to go, they'd be like, no, man, I'm too hungover, you know. So while our friends were partying in the night, we were getting ready to sleep to catch waves early in the morning, you know. So it was a complete lifestyle shift. And then when we eventually wanted to buy our own surfboard, our parents were just like, you know, you tried it once. Why do you want to do it again? You know, so it was really difficult to explain that to them, you know, just the feeling we were getting just like through surfing. Ever since then, Tushar and I sold pretty much everything we didn't need, you know, and we saved up enough money to buy a surfboard. And for the first 2 years, we shared one board between the two of us, you know. So when I was in the water, he was on the beach cheering me on, and I would do the same for him, you know. It was a really simple time, and we just got so used to waking up early in the morning and heading out to the beach before class, you know, catching a few waves and then starting our day, you know.
How were you getting to the beach?
So initially, we would lug our 9-foot long board. We didn't have a board bag either. We would wrap our long board in like 2 sleeping bags and tie it with rope and then put it onto a rickshaw to take it to the bus stand and then like try to like sneak it into the local bus, which gets super crowded. And so we didn't have a car. But then after like 2 years, we finally got our own car. And so we started looking for surf spots close by. So that was, yeah, it was a fun time, you know, when no one was surfing. But we had that experience, you know. We were the only ones on the beach, except for the fishermen who go out to sea early in the morning.
Corey, I know your story is completely different because it was almost inevitable that you would become a surfer or you would surf somehow, right?
Yeah, both my parents surfed. My mom refused to get out of the water when she was pregnant with me. She kind of, you know, went from surfing shortboard to surfing a longboard when she couldn't paddle on her stomach. So she had to kneeboard and then to a mat up until basically I was born.
Wow.
So I was on a surfboard before I learned how to stand up. My father would hold me on the surfboard and kind of just let me get my sea legs. And I ended up surfing, really beginning surfing, when I got my first board and I was 5 years old. I started competing when I was 8 years old and had sort of a kind of tumultuous experience with surfing, which was largely centered just around surf contests until I chose to step away. And I think what Ashita was saying earlier about just being drawn to the ocean, that happened for me. I felt like the ocean was calling me back in a way that I'd never really experienced before. You know, right around when I got back into surfing, I'd say, you know, in the early 2000s when I was going for my first world titles. So it was in stepping away from surfing that I found that connection that Ashita had right away, which was that sort of being called by the ocean, like, you're one of mine. You're one of my creatures. You're going to need to stay, you know, stay close to me. So,
Corey, I know that you're no longer competing, but I just want to go back to when you were younger and you started competing. How much training were you doing?
When I was that young, both my parents competed, so it was just consistently going to the beach all the time, surfing every different type of wave and every different type of condition. It was a job, you know, it was a full-time job because you surfed, you know, 2-3 times a day and you ran and you worked out and, you know, because you had to not only surf well, but you also had to look good for sponsors and for media. For me personally, with regard to competition, the expectation was it had to consume your entire life. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you were, you know, completely obsessed and myopic toward this goal of being the best you could possibly be.
Well, could you explain to us what sort of pressures you were under as a professional surfer?
Oh, goodness. And I think any female athlete will identify with this. the being a body that was desirable to men. Happy-go-lucky, smiling, kind of like a very flirtatious, non-serious attitude, being very unintimidating. And then, of course, you know, the thinness. So something that was prevalent, and I've talked with some women, and it continues to actually be prevalent in professional surfing, is the problem of eating disorders. And that was definitely an issue for me and my peers. And then the sexism, of course, you know, you're never, ever, you could give 120% and you were just kind of flicked aside as though you were inconsequential and trivial. So you're always working twice as hard for 25% of the pie. You know, and later on in life, once I got to the realization that for me, competition and the competitive mindset in surfing has no place, that has opened up a whole creative realm in my interaction with surfing. And I think that the difference between dedicating 100% of your time to being number one versus enjoying allowing this innovative, creative, connective force and activity to really shift and move through you has been just a massive, massive transition for me.
I'm so fascinated by your story, Corey, because I'm at this crossroads in my life where I'm deciding, like, should I even try to pursue the competitive path or just, you know, let my life flow freely the way it has been, you know. In the beginning, people's attitude towards what I was doing was very different. Everyone was very pessimistic about it. They were like, what are you doing? You know, you're just a beach bum. But now, 9 years down the line, a lot more people know about surfing in India, and I've come to be recognized as the first female surfer. So now suddenly there's like a lot of pressure on me to kind of probably compete, you know, just because I'm representing women surfing. Thankfully, there's so many more young girls getting into it, and we actually have a women's category now. So now I see mothers and fathers, like, you know, encouraging their daughters to get into surfing only to compete, you know. So it's quite a stark contrast for me in such a short amount of time, because, like, when I started, my family was just like, what are you doing, you know. So I'm trying to see what works for me right now. I'm happy to go and represent and, like, encourage all the other girls, but I'm not so inclined towards competing professionally. But I see other people, you know, who, like, love competing. They're driven by something, and I'm not really sure what it is, you know. So what was it that was driving you in your initial years, you know, when you were competing?
A lack. That's what was driving me. A lack. And that's what you found when you found the ocean, was the filling of that lack, right? Mm-hmm. So unfortunately for me, my relationship with the ocean came with all the baggage. It came with the competition. It came with the expectations. And it wasn't until I stepped away from competition and when I got back into surfing and the connection and the relationship with the ocean, that's when that lack began to go away, and the need for competition also left. Yeah, what drove me to competition and kept me in it for so long was a very core feeling of you know, not enough, not being enough.
Corey, I'm just hearing you talk about your decision to stop competing, but you had quite a stellar career, and it seems to me there must have been some real highlights. Can you think of one big highlight in your career?
Yeah, my third world title. And the reason for that was because, you know, I had won my two world titles consecutively in 2000 and 2001, and then left surfing for, you know, 7 years. So I chose to get into surfing again without sponsors. I chose to do it for myself on my own terms. And working up to winning that third world title gave myself a platform to use the voice that I now have to try to carve out this space of difference for female surfers. So that felt absolutely amazing to be able to do that on my own terms. Ishita, I was actually curious about the 65-year-old woman that you've got surfing.
Yes, yes. I'm glad you asked.
Yeah. How did you convince her? What did you say to her to get her in the water? I am so curious about this.
our surf school is set up in this small, tiny fishing village, okay, close to Manipal. And we've been going there for like over 5 years now. And ever since we first went there, we wanted to kind of get all the kids in the water, you know, because they would sit on the rocks and watch us surf. But, you know, surfing can tend to be such an exclusive sport that we didn't want to keep them, like, you know, we wanted to share surfing with them. So in the beginning, we would take all the kids in the village, we teach them how to surf for free, all right? So I was trying to, like, convince all the young girls and, like, the women and the moms and the grandmoms of the kids who were coming to surf, you know, like, tell them, you should come in the water, you know. But it was really difficult to convince them. And then very recently, we screened, we had like a nice screening of Beyond the Surface, the documentary surf film I'm a part of. And after this lady watched the film, she just quietly came to me and she said, I want to come surf with you. I want to come tomorrow. And I just couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. You know, like, of course I take you surfing, you know. And so the next day, I was like, okay, let's go. And she was a little, like, apprehensive because her husband wasn't too keen about it, you know. He was just worried about what clothes she would wear in the water. But she was just so excited. She was bubbling with excitement, you know. And believe it or not, you know, she's 65 years old. She's grown up, like, her entire life right by the beach. And it was her first time ever entering the water, ever entering the sea in her life. So I can't even fully describe what an incredible moment it was, you know. And just to see her, like, get in the water, she was just so playful, you know. And, like, it's amazing because, like, after she started surfing, and she's come, like, 3 or 4 times since then, you know. So it wasn't, like, a one-time thing. And every time her husband's just, like, a little, like, oh, you know, he makes a grumpy face. But she's just like, ah, I don't care, you know. I'm going surfing. And now that she's coming surfing, like, all the other younger girls in the village are like, okay, if she can do it, I can do it, you know. So she's inspiring the younger girls to come. So since then, her daughter as well as her daughter-in-law have come, and they're encouraging their daughters, you know, so her granddaughters to surf. So I'm so happy to see this, you know. It's been a very slow transition, but I think this is going to be a lasting one.
Well, Ishita, I'd like to hear more about people's reaction to your surfing career in India. So you were saying that people weren't that receptive?
Yeah, I mean, initially, forget it. Okay, so, like, initially, people were just like, you know, you're just a beach bum. What are you doing? You know, so in terms of career prospects, it was like, okay, she's just signing her life away. Like, what is she doing, you know? But also, people in India can be really, like, open and blunt, you know. So right off the bat, like, as soon as I started getting darker, you know, people would just be like, oh my God, Ishita, you've become so dark, you know. You look like you work in a charcoal factory, you know.
Oh,
and so
could you explain quickly why it's such a big thing to be dark in India, why it's not a favorable thing?
I don't know why, but for a really long time, we've just glorified fair skin in Indian media. You know, we have advertisements for skin whitening creams and lotions, and everyone's just obsessed with that. There's an inferiority complex, you know, if you have dark skin. So no one really wants to get dark. So that's like actually one of the biggest reasons why a lot of women still don't, not only women actually, even men still don't want to learn how to surf, because they're just afraid of getting darker and it's not considered beautiful. It's an unhealthy obsession with fair skin, you know.
And what did you say, Ishita, when people said, you know, when people were criticizing you for getting really dark, what did you say to them?
I mean, it never really bothered me, because it's not like I started out being super fair or anything. I've always been brown. It's just that I was much darker now. And I just felt like I've always felt beautiful, you know. I don't need someone else's approval. So I felt like I could use my position as, like, you know, just to become a role model, a positive role model for other women in India, you know, because it's unrealistic to expect to be fair and consider only that beautiful, you know.
I would like to just cheer right now and scream and yell, Ashita. That was beautiful, beautifully said.
Wow. Thank you. Yeah. Wow. I mean, fair or dark, you know, like you just have to love yourself. There's plenty of people who tell you you're not beautiful for an N number of reasons, you know. You just have to feel good about yourself and your own skin.
Yeah. Now, Ashita, do you have any questions for Corey?
I'm going to ask something like, just like how you stay in shape, you know, how you can keep up your fitness outside of the water.
You know, I think you're perfectly situated for one of the activities that most women do, which is yoga. Mm-hmm. What you do need is to make sure that you stay flexible. So swimming and yoga, I would say, and then just going for long paddles.
When I started surfing, I was really weak, you know. And I would constantly get beat up, you know. I was black and blue and bruised all over, you know. But like slowly, like now I've built this like lean muscle, you know, and I feel so mm-hmm. much stronger. So,
yeah. Well, even people who are in really great shape when they first start surfing, they get beat up because the ocean is unlike mm-hmm. any other activity that people have done. I've watched people who are, you know, guys who weightlift or swimmers and they have this arrogance like I'm in great shape. And they go out and the ocean just smacks them around. So, you know, it's not necessarily how much muscle you have. It's just the time spent in getting your body acquainted with that type of environment.
But on that point, Corey and Ashita, about being smacked around by the ocean, have you ever been in a situation where you've been in danger, Corey?
Oh, multiple times.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? What happened?
Well, I mean, you know, the fact that you get pushed down, I mean, Hawaii. So I've been over to Hawaii a couple of times and there was this one particular session when I was surfing Sunset Beach and it was, you know, quite a few feet overhead. And I ended up getting, you know, pounded. So I fell. The wave pushed me down, down, down. And usually when you're underwater, you can kind of see the green. It's a little murky. But I went down to where it was absolutely black and then felt another wave go on top of me. And, you know, no breaths in between. At that point, something else clicks in and you just get really, really calm. It's great to talk about surfing as being something that's playful and connecting, but at the same time, the ocean pays no mind to you when it comes to, you know, if you don't know what you're doing and you panic, then your life's at stake. You're going to get hurt. You know, I've got scrapes and scars and dings in the head. So it's dangerous. It's an environment that you must learn to respect.
Ashita?
Yeah, I believe like the ocean, like when you spend time in the ocean, it really brings to surface, you know, all your personal doubts, fears, anxieties, you know, and you really realize your strengths and limitations. And it really pushes you to kind of stay calm. That's like the number one rule in surfing or anytime you're in the ocean, you know, to stay calm. And I tell that to my students all the time, but sometimes when you're in that situation, you realize just how difficult it is, you know. So in India, at least on the West Coast, throughout most of the year, we just have pretty mellow waves, you know, and especially where we are, it's a really good beginner surf spot. But right before the monsoon season every year, for like 2 or 3 weeks, this window opens up where we get massive like pre-monsoon swell, where the waves suddenly go from like 4 feet to like 15 feet, you know. And when we were first learning how to surf, like that would be like, you know, our goal, that, you know, we'd be able to go out in the monsoon waves and, you know, catch waves. And it's just so scary because first of all, it's monsoon season. So it's not even like the sun is out and the water's blue green, you know, it's like dark and, you know, like ominous, like it just looks so scary. And you're like, why am I out here? And like, especially surfing in India, there isn't even a lifeguard on the beach to watch out for you. You know, you're just on your own. And you're like, oh my God, my mom doesn't even know I'm here, you know, and you're just so terrified because like, there's this massive wall of water building up in front of you and you can't even see past it. And then once you make it past that, there's like 3 or 4 even bigger waves coming right at you, you know? So you really at that moment have to decide to just give it your best, you know? It is like do or die. And I've had some pretty gnarly wipeouts. I'm sure Corey's been through it many times, but you know, sometimes you kind of estimate the distance between you and the surface of the water, you know, once you wipe out, and you kind of have that much breath in your lungs. But sometimes what happens is by the time you reach the surface, which you think is the surface, there's another wave over it. So you kind of have to travel double the distance, and you don't have that breath of air, you know. So that's when you really panic, you know, and sometimes like your rope can get stuck in the rocks and it's just terrifying, you know. But yeah, all you can do at that moment is stay calm, and all these experiences just mold you and shape you into becoming a better surfer, you know.
It sounds utterly terrifying.
It's a training ground for extraordinarily confident, strong, tenacious, persistent women.
Yep,
definitely. It is a training ground.
Ladies, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
I feel like surfing, but not in India, not during monsoon. I think I'll go to California. I think I'll stick to California.
You should.
We've got some real mellow waves here in the summertime.
India too.
No.
Warm water, which feels like a bath, and lots of dolphins.
It feels like a bath. I like the sound of that. Thank you.
Oh, I forgot to ask you one question, Corey. Oh. I wanted to ask you, do you plan on coming to surf in India with me anytime soon?
I would love to. I would absolutely love to. India is on my on my bucket list of places to visit. I can't wait to get over there, and you better believe I'm going to come surfing with you.
Oh, awesome. I can't wait. And I'm sure all the other women will be stoked to meet you too. It'll be amazing. I hope our paths cross soon.
My guests today have been the three-time world champion surfer Corey Schumacher and Ishita Malviya, India's first female professional surfer. Now, our archive is full of intriguing, colourful and unexpected conversations between women from all over the world, so do go take a listen, or better yet, subscribe to our podcast. Just search online for BBC The Conversation. Thanks for listening. Till next time. You've been listening to a download of The Conversation from the BBC World Service. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, please go to bbcworldservice.com/podcast.